Welcome to JBJS OrthoCore. Listen as members of the ortho community, residents, surgeons, educators, staff, and patients share their stories about the experiences and people most important in their lives and the lessons they learned along the way. OrthoCore is an audio archive inspired by StoryCore and independently organized by the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery.
All right. Well, thanks for joining me. If you don't mind, tell us your name and where you grew up, came from, and where you are now.
Sure. So Steve Olson, Stephen A, I guess, in all my publications. So I was born and raised in St. Louis, actually, which you know well. So my dad was a mechanic. He ran a service station at the corner of Brentwood and Manchester, which right now I think is a Rolls-Royce dealership, but it was a Standard Oil dealership then. And so I grew up just, you know, using my hands and doing that kind of thing. And there's nobody else in my family in medicine. And I think early on, my mother probably planted the idea, you're gonna be a doctor. And I just don't remember thinking anything else. So I ended up getting in med school and went to University of Missouri. It was something we could afford. And at that time, you know, the tuition was $6,000 a year. It was ridiculous. did that and then stayed there for residency. And during my residency, we had it when I was a PGY2, we had this patient come in who was, of course, you know, misbehaving, you know, drunk and driving fast and so forth. His car hit a concrete pylon up on 63 going north of town. And he had this horrible pelvis fracture. And it turned out that he had he had bilateral SI joint disruptions. He had a complex both column on one side that was really displaced. He had a pubic symphysis diastasis, and he had a non-displaced anterior column on the other side. It was just a mess. So this is 1987 to 88, right in there, somewhere in there. So at that time, the only books that were published then were Tile had his book, the first edition, and Dana Mears had a book on pelvic fractures at that time. It had come out in 86. And so I remember going to the library and reading this. I took the x-ray to my attending and I said, you know, in Missouri in those days, you know, now Jim Standard's there and it's a big program. We had two residents a year.
Wow.
And we had four attendings. Had a guy who did sports, a guy who did spine, a guy who did foot, and a guy who did hand. And so I took it to my chair and I showed him the x-ray. I said, what do you think? And he said, that's bad. That's all he had to say. So I ended up, reading Neer's book, and then I was thumbing through JBJS, and I noticed that there was this ad for this course. And it turns out it was the second Letrinel course that Motto was putting on in the U.S. It was 1988. And so I went to my attending and my chief, and I said, what do you think? I said, do you think if I did this, it'd be way over my head? Would I be, you know, whatever? And he said, no, I think it'd be fine. It was like $1,500 at that time. It was cadavers and sawbones and the whole thing. It was really expensive. And he said, but I'm not paying for it. So I ended up, I talked to my wife and I took vacation and I went. And that changed my career. You know, I met Joel and I met Mayo and Keith, you know, and Jeff Mast and Letrinel and all these guys. And it was just phenomenal. You know, it just changed. That's really what drove me into trauma more than anything else was that. So then I started doing stuff with AO and, you know, went to the basic and advanced and all that stuff and, you know, got involved with them. And I ended up, I didn't know anything about trauma or medicine or, you know, anything. And I remember I really wanted to go to Harborview for a fellow. And so I was the first interview that year. I was in January. I was out there trying to get in, you know. And Swinkowski was, I guess, and he was, as it turned out, he was later that year, I think he moved to Minnesota. So he was in the midst of all kinds of stuff going on. But, you know, he just never got back to anybody. So I ended up going to fellowship at UC Davis with Mike, and that was a great you know, that was a great choice. I didn't know it at the time, but it was really a good thing. Mike was a great mentor. I met Tim, and, you know, and the rest is history from that regard. But so then I started my career there, and of course got involved in the OTA. My first OTA meeting was 1990. I think it was Minnesota, I think. And I haven't missed too many since then. Anyway.
So how did you originally decide to go into orthopedic surgery?
I was, so I was a second year student and I was getting involved in research. And I was working in the lab of a plastic surgeon. And I knew I wanted to be a surgeon. I really didn't know anything else about it other than that. And he said to me, "You look like an orthopod." And then I realized, as I started to scrub some stuff, I realized that the tools and stuff they were using were very similar to what I'd grown up with, you know, in a mechanics world. And so I thought, well, I can do this. So anyway, that's how I got into orthopedics, and then that's how I got into trauma.
So you mentioned some of the mentors, but were there specific mentors who influenced you that you would like to bring up?
Well, I think Joel for sure. I think Mike Chapman, Tim Bray. Absolutely, for sure. I think that, you know, having the opportunity when I was, I did Mike's fellowship, and then I had arranged for this, my wife, I'll call her back. Anyway, I had arranged to do this European thing. So I went over, Joel helped me set up. So I spent 5 weeks with Emil Letourneau. And then I went over and did a month with Reinhold Gons. And then I did a month with Journey in Hanover. It was like this great thing. And then I came back, and at sort of somewhere in the midst, I can't remember exactly where, probably my last year of residency, Joel was moving from USC and he went to private practice in Good Sam. And he realized he needed help, so he wanted fellows. So he asked me if I'd be his fellow, and I like, I couldn't say no, you know. So I did that after I got back from Europe. So Tornetta was the fellow with Joel right before me. And then I followed him for 6 months. I was there from January to June of 2003. No, 1993, I'm sorry, 1993.
So what lessons has your work life taught you?
Oh, geez. Lots of things. I think, you know, like one of the things I've learned over the years is, like a lot of surgeons, I have ADHD. So I can hyper-focus, you know, which is great at surgery. So you can really, you know, stay there, but you can also lose track of time, and you can get a little distracted. So one of the things I've learned, a couple things, you know, when I'm in the OR, and particularly when the case is getting long and I'm losing a little bit of my focus, I have to really be patient, because sometimes it's tempting to want to just get out, you know, because you're at the end of your attention span, and you have to really refocus and do that. So I think that's one thing. I think the other thing that I've learned is that, you know, I'm also a bit of an introvert. And so it's easy for me to be by myself, but it's also where I recharge. So like when I do a full day at clinic and I'm talking to people all day long and I come home, I'm just wiped out just from that, you know, kind of having to be out there so much. And I think, you know, like at meetings like this too, sometimes it happens to me too. I just talk with all these people and I'm just like drained, you know? So, mm-hmm. So those are the kind of insights on how I work best, you know, and how to not be abrupt and change topics in the middle of sentences and do things, because I'm, you know, people feel like you're not paying attention, and it's not really true, but that's the way it's perceived, you know. And so anyway, those things are things that I've learned along the way.
So what are you proudest of?
Well, I didn't mention Farsh. So Farsh was a great research mentor of mine. He's really, that was important too. Mike was important research mentor too, but what am I proudest of? Well, Kappa Delta, I've got to say that. You know, that was a big deal. Right, and that ultimately came out of Farsha's idea. We were talking about, I got him interested in post-traumatic arthritis, and what interested him was the fact that there was nothing at the time, nothing published about it. So it was wide open, and that was the thing that was attractive. And I was dead set on looking at a model that was gonna test reduction, because I knew that was the answer. I'm a surgeon, right? It's gotta be the answer. And Farsha's response was, well, create a model where you break the joint and let it get arthritis and just see what happens. And so we did, and that's led to a lot of insights, I think like the insight of inflammation and the way that post-traumatic arthritis is really different than arthritis. And at first, when we first started talking about this, it was not happy. It was not a happy thing. There was a couple of researchers who felt strongly that it's arthrosis, it's not arthritis, and you know, it's not inflammation, and that, you know, this is just wrong. And then I'd put in grants to the NIH and these guys that do the collagen type 2, you know, studies where they've induced antibody. They're all like, well, we know this already from collagen type. And it's like, it's been particularly challenging and frustrating on the research side to make progress. But I think it's finally coming to the point that a lot of people are very interested in post-traumatic arthritis. So I think we're making some progress there. So that's been really kind of fun. I think, you know, over the years, I've had opportunity to teach a lot of fellows, and a lot of them have gone on to do good things. That's a lot of fun. And I think back to being OTA president, that was a neat year. I think the two things I think of most, I was thinking about this in preparation for the talk, was we established the Community Trauma Award that year. But the other thing that's less known maybe is that at the time, the orthopedic residency curriculum didn't have anything in it about research. And so I asked Bob, Bob at UNC.
Ostrom,
thank you. That's Bob Ostrom. I had a brain fart there. That Bob was running the program, the slides then. And Bill Ritchie had just come off of the education committee, which he did for a long time, was presidential line. I called Bob and I said, I was wondering if you guys could do a slide set on, you know, how to do clinical research. And they were like, what are you talking about? And I said, well, I think it's needed. You know, nobody really knows how to do it. And how do you have competencies and what do you learn? And this kind of thing. And so now, you know, so I when you go look at this, there's actually four talks now on research, which are just wonderful. But that's I didn't do any of that work. I just suggested it. But I think that's a small contribution. We can
definitely
say it was good.
Do you have any regrets?
Lots of them. I say that, but not really. You know, there are patients I wish things had gone better for, or put the screw in a different place, or that kind of stuff. But overall, I think it's been interesting. You know, I've been in practice now for 30 years, and I look back at it, Anna, and I gotta say, where'd it go? You know, where did it go? I some things from 30 years ago, I can remember crystal clear in these cases, but they're sort of, you know, intermixed with so many things. I can't really say that I have, at the end of the day, that many regrets. I think it's been fun. You know, there's always wish you'd have gotten this grant or that thing or whatever it is, but, you know, that's cool.
If you could talk to a younger version of yourself, what would you say?
That's a good question. I would tell that younger person to spend a little more time talking to folks. I tend to be kind of abrupt and very focused and very, you know, in the moment about this thing and not so much about family or this, that, and the other thing. And I've had to actually mechanically tell myself, no, you need to ask about these things. These are important. People care about this stuff. And so it's kind of, it seems silly, but it's sort of, for me, it's that learning that behavior early would be helpful.
So is there a specific, and you mentioned a little about the post-traumatic arthritis, but is there a specific orthopedic trauma device, technique, procedure, research, or something that you have a specific connection with that you'd like to share?
Oh, well, yeah, sure. The whole PTOA thing. I think where we are now, so the latest thing we've done, well, two things. One is in the mouse model. We went ahead and did the articular fracture model in a nude mouse. And we were thinking that, you know, with adaptive and innate immunity, that, you know, T cells obviously involved in inflammation and, you know, therefore, of course, they've got to be involved in arthritis. So we thought, do a nude mouse, you'd have less arthritis. And, you know, right. So we did a nude mouse and we had more arthritis. So what that tells me, and getting people to fund this is the next step. That's the hard part. But what it tells us, as I've talked to immunologists, is that what it's saying is that the T cells are modifying the response. They're not actually responsible for the response, but they're modifying the response. And so that to me suggests that, you know, just like cardiology was 20, 30 years ago, right? Once you understand the immune response better, we're gonna have a much better way to treat. And I think a much more patient-specific way to treat, you know, injury and joint injury specific to that. So that's kind of one whole area that I'm kind of interested in. The other thing we did was we were looking at little all my stuff's basic science, you know, and in the OTA, it's kind of funny. As a basic scientist, you're kind of the redheaded stepchild, you know, you're not out there doing clinical work, so what are you doing? But I like basic science quite a bit. And so we have this osteochondral core model where you can compress it uniformly and you get apoptosis in the cartilage, or you can point load it and get a fracture and you don't get apoptosis. And so we looked at that and looked at the gene expression incubating with synovium. So we had normal synovium and we had inflamed synovium. And so it turns out that the two factors that modify the response are the state of inflammation of the synovium and the injury. They're both independent predictors. So this is going to come out in Nature, actually,
Wow. Pretty
soon. This is huge. Osteochondral core study, but it's really pretty interesting because it basically says that, you know, your ACL injury is very different than your articular fracture. But of course, once the patient shows up, they've got their injury.
Mm-hmm.
So our job really is to modify the inflammatory environment of the joint. And that I think, if that goes forward and people can adopt that, I think that's going to help a lot of people.
So last question. For generations listening to this years from now, is there any wisdom you would want to pass on to them?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. I think, well, there's lots of things. I think from a clinician, being a good doctor is important. Learning to listen to your patients and learning to ultimately try and understand what they're telling you. Most of the time, they actually know what's going on. They don't always have the words to tell you, but they actually know. So I think learning to really take the time to really listen to your patients is important. I think on a research level, you know, taking time to think out of the box, you know, when, like, I remember talking to Tom Brown, Iowa guy, mechanics, you know, 25 years ago, and talking to him about this idea that osteoarthritis might in fact be a cumulative trauma disorder. You know, the idea that you have a little injury and you get a little immune response, and then after a while you have another injury and then you get maybe a little bigger immune response, and then this kind of thing. And of course, he was very mechanics, you know. And he said to me, you know, you are way out of the box. There is no data to support that. And I said, Tom, I'm happy to be out of the box because we've been doing this mechanic stuff for 30 years and it hadn't changed anything. And he just didn't like it at all. But I think I think you have to sometimes be able to do that. And then I think the last thing I would say is to really, you know, develop and savor friendships and family.
Thank you. This is great.